Welcome everybody to Black Coffee and Theology. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I am so excited for you to listen to the interview that I did with public theologian, writer, activist, Alicia Crosby. Our friendship is a breath of fresh air. I enjoy her so much. And we talk about Hagar. And we also include some thoughts from Camille Hernandez's new book, Hero and the Whore. Also, that's our friend. So go pick up her book. Anyways, sit back and relax and enjoy this conversation with Alicia Crosby. All right, everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I am excited because I have my friend, public theologian, all-around awesome person, Alicia Crosby. Welcome, hi. Welcome, welcome.
Hello.
I know the other, my other two cohorts, Sam and Trey, will be jealous that the first time you're being interviewed is on Black Coffee and Theology. But but they just don't have to be jealous.
They will be all right.
So the first question that I like to ask people as we get into a larger conversation is, tell us who you are and how you show up in the world.
So it's like super funny is like I literally just had a conversation slash argument with my mother about this right before we were recording this, because she's like, tell me in four words. I'm like, I'm not gonna give you four words. I can give you shorter words. I don't need an explanation. Okay, I hear you. But in order for me to self-describe in a way that makes sense for me, I need more than four words. And so the words that I will give to you all and how I try to show up in the world is that I'm a minister. I am a justice educator. I'm a consultant. I'm a writer. I run my mouth sometimes, so I'm a speaker. And I'm a lover. I know sometimes we talk about lovers being like an amorous thing, and definitely that's part of what love is. But I love people. Like, I love this world. I have a tattoo that's like right above my heart that says, love is my resistance, because it is. Love is the way that I push back. So I think if I'm able to like more fully describe like how I hope to show up in the world, like I gotta add lover in the midst of all these other titles. Even though that's probably the most expansive one, because love looks like a lot of things. Honestly, it's the thing that all of those other bits like follow. Like love, as the song says, love is the answer.
I like it. I'm gonna ask you one just silly question.
Do it.
Is what song either describes how you are in the season, or what song are you vibing to?
Oh God! Lately. Oh God!
You'll be all over the place with what you listen to. So this,
okay, I really am. So like, let me pull up my Tidal, and I am saying Tidal versus Spotify, because if you didn't know, Tidal actually pays artists. They're one of the people who pays artists most for streams, mm-hmm. And so I run them in my little coins.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. What is it's like, what am I listening to right now? I've actually been listening to Dua Lipa over the last couple of days. Like Physical has been on like a repeat, and Sweetest Pie with our beloved Meg the Stallion.
A.
Damn. Let me see. I think if I'm gonna go with the song right now, I'm gonna go with On My Mama by Victoria Monet.
Okay, I. Why are we twins? Why
And kindred spirit.
are we the way that we are? Same. Also, off that same album, Stop Asking Me For So, is an anthem right now
It's a
for me.
vibe. Like, and you know what? Like, part of why I love it, I love it because it's such a like a such a black thing. Just On My Mama, like, it's just such of like a black like reference. And so for her to like entitle a song this, but it's just like, yeah, like I look fly, I look good. Like you wish you could touch my bag, right? But it's also that callback to On My Mama, On My Hood, out of my, like it's so it's like referencing so many different things. So it's like a throwback and just a reminder of just like blackness more generally. Like I just, it's everything. Now, if you were to ask me what my theme song was, I would have to go with "Where's the Fun and Forever" by Miguel.
Oh,
Like
snap.
Miguel is b my bae. I love Miguel so much. I've never seen this man in concert despite trying 3 times on literal different continents.
My God.
But it'll happen someday. But that song is a theme song for me because it reads like a psalm. I mean, it's asking where the fun's forever, and it's like encouraging us to live life more fully, because life is finite. And so, like, if we had forever, like, we wouldn't have the moments of enjoyment that we do. So yeah, that's like probably my favorite song slash theme song, but "On My Mama" is my song for now.
I love it. I love it. Oh, my mama. That's a good transition to, no, it doesn't transition at all, but
Talking about my mom.
to talking about what's on the table for today, we're talking about Hagar. And
Are we talking about spiritual kin?
yes, we are. And as you know, as we discuss Hagar, I have to say that our first connection, our first interaction was over Hagar online. And you had replied to something that I wrote, and you said, if you ever want to talk about Hagar, hit me up. You were a relative stranger at that point,
Oh no, not
but
relative. Like, I mean, I had seen you in the internet streets of
I
the thing that we will continue to call Twitter.
yes.
And it's just like, oh, this dude's cool. But she was like, you were talking about Hagar, and it's just like, oh, we can be people. Like,
You were like,
let's
hit me
talk
up.
about this.
And then we did get on the phone and we talked for like over an hour about Hagar. So this feels full circle, some years later to be on a podcast talking about her. So I'm curious, when you think about Hagar and you think about how she shows up in Genesis 16 and 21, what are some of the things that initially drew you into her story?
Well, one I need to say is like, I wasn't always attuned to the story of Hagar.
Same.
Like many people, I had my attention captured by other folks in that story in Hagar's world, particularly, Sarah and Abraham, slash Abram and Sarai, like however you call them. Just depends on their time of life. But that's who I was like taught, right? I was taught to pay attention to their story. And Hagar played the background, but as I got more invested in justice and liberation, and specifically looking for people, like looking at people who often get ignored, like that's when I start seeing Hagar. And she, like in those passages in Genesis, is the person who stands out to me because of her resilience. And I'm like a little bit like, I hate using that word because the resilience means that you're going through some stuff.
Yes.
And I mean, she was going through enslavement and, trigger warning for those who need it. but was dealing with sexual abuse. Like when you're in sexual servitude and have been given to a person, without your consent, and given to them expressly for the purpose of bearing a child, like you are dealing with continuous complex trauma. We got to pay attention to those things. We need to work to orient ourselves to see that. And it took me a while to get there. So yes, resilience, because our sis went through shit. Wisdom. A lot of folks, struggle with Hagar going back to the site of her oppression. I honestly see it as being quite brilliant because, just kind of using a little bit of imagination and thinking about when people oftentimes do go back to oppressive states, it's to prepare to leave for good. And she needed time to develop a plan to leave for good and never have to go back and rely on those things. And so I see her as being brilliant and strong and wise and prophetic. I mean, this is the first person we're introduced to who names God. Like in our tradition, like that's what we know to be true. Like God was naming people, people was naming each other, but like Hagar is the first person to say, like, you are the God who sees. And so I've got to call her a prophet because she's speaking truth. And that's the thing that, that prophets do. They speak truth and speak truth to power at that. And so when you're talking about divine power, I think that there's a prophetic, move in being able to name God. So in short, Hagar is everything.
No, I love that. I love, that framing that you put on it. I too was enamored with other people in the story of Genesis. And even how the same story pops up in Galatians and Paul talks about Sarai and Hagar and seems to point to you don't want to be Hagar. You don't want to be of that lineage of the bondwoman. You want to be of the household of faith, that free house from Sarai, right? But I say this often that the person of Hagar was the start of my deconstruction journey because early on something wasn't clicking. The math was not mathing. As we learned about the virtues of Sarai and Abram, and we learned about they would do anything to go after God, I started reading the text like, wait a minute though, like something's not adding up. And in no joke, every message that I had ever heard about Hagar listed her as rebellious as she ran away from the things of faith. And she played either a background character or an excuse for Islamophobia, and which is very pertinent right now in the day that we live in. And so when she's introduced to us, it's interesting that Sarai's first words about the situation that she's in and Hagar, she says, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her." So the opening of, hey, there's this Egyptian slave. We don't get words from her. We don't get thoughts from her.
We don't even get her real name. We got what they called her.
Yes, right. Exactly. It's we don't know that that is probably not her name, is Hagar. That's what she was called. And we don't have where she was acquired from. A lot of scholars have thoughts that in the previous journey that Abram and Sarai just went on to Egypt is where they acquired her. But here we are, to your point, is she's a fulfillment of a family promise that Sarai is looking for. And to me, it looks like sex trafficking.
It's trafficking. It's so many things. But it's not consensual. That's one thing, it's very clear. It's not consensual. And whatever it is that we use to like talk about her engagement, like with Sarai and with Abram, it is not bound by consent or the upholding of her dignity. It's not something that's loving. It's just not.
It's
Like, you
funny
don't,
that
yeah, you go
you're
say.
saying that because people play the same game with talking about this that they do with David and Bathsheba. And you're
With a
using
whole ass predator. David's a whole ass predator. Like, just putting it out there. If you don't know, now you know.
because you're lifting up this consent piece, and that's big. So anyways, I interrupted you, but
No,
people
you're
do
good.
play that game that she was a slave, so we can't put modern conventions of what we think of as agency upon her. So,
We sure as shit can, because the fact that she was enslaved in the first place meant that she didn't have consent, right? Even though the type of enslavement, yes, does differ, like when we're talking about like enslavement in that context and then like antebellum slavery, but enslavement is enslavement, period. Like, you are bound to the will of another person. You do not have agency that you can act without consequence. And so any movement of your own accord that would afford you dignity is something that comes with consequence. And that's how you know consent isn't there. Consent means you can say yes, you can say no, you can be like, yes, but now it's a no, or no, and now it's a yes. And all of these conversations were happening without her. They ain't sit her down and be like, do you want to, like, bear this man's children? Do you want to sexually engage with him? Like, do you want, any of this? Do you want this life? They didn't ask her that. And that's how it became abuse, because she had no say in what was happening to her.
And that mistreatment seems physical, that she received at the hands of Sarai. There was a lot going on, and so she fled into the wilderness. And what always I think about how the angel of the Lord greets her the two times that they interact, right? In the first instance, the angel says, Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? Which that is a prophetic question. I'm sorry. And then the second time, the angel asks, what ails you? And I think of that invitation into relationship as very intriguing, both of them. But her being named, hey, Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?
Like,
Now
you
you
just told
already
me where I
know.
came from.
You just like
Like, you just call me what these people call me. You just name the person who I'm tethered to against my will. You already know. Like, why are you asking questions that you know the answers to?
Exactly. And I think it's interesting, where have you come from and where are you going?
And that's the prophetic thing. It's like, what do you want out of this? This is where we're being. This is where she's asked a question. This is where she gets her agency activated. This is where consent comes into play. Where are you going? Like, that's speaking about self-determination, because she fled. She left the place where she didn't have options. She's now in this, wilderness experience with this angel of the Lord, and is being asked, maybe for the first time in her life, girl, what do you want? And she had to discern that.
And there has to be something, because I still wrestle. You alluded to early, she's in this place, in this wilderness place with the angel of the Lord, eventually names, you're the God who sees, right? And God tells her to go back into, to her master's house. I still wrestle with that, right? Like I do see the brilliance that you alluded to earlier. I also know how this type of passage is weaponized in Christian spaces to ask us to go and submit again to systems of abuse, right? To wait for the release of God, right? Meanwhile, you're in this spiritually abusive place. And so what would you say to that? Like people find this so deeply unsettling when they do start to get into her story.
So I am thinking of like rap lyrics, specifically, I think it's like 50 Cent who was speaking about, I was patiently waiting for a rap to explode on one. And then two, one of my favorite lines is real G's move in silence like lasagna with Lil Wayne. And so that's kind of where my energies get centered on, like in terms of going back. Like I really do see it as preparation. And I think that like because we don't have details of the story, because the story isn't unfortunately focused on her. And oftentimes stories that are retold are told about the people who have the most power that is exercised.
Truly.
I think that it's very possible that in her going back, she was taking things, right? Sneaking away a little bit of food here, a little water jug here, things that could be used as currency there, and like actually did the work of preparation again. So when she left, she ain't have to come back. And so like that's, and so in my wrestling, like that's what I see, because I think about like, again, like what do people who find themselves in abusive or toxic situations do when they're forced to remain in a place until it's safe to leave, right? Like we don't know if they would have brought her back, if there would have been like really dire consequences. Like we don't know, because those aren't the things that are told in the story. But I do think in her going back, like however it is that she chose to live into that time, that when she left, she was Gucci. Like she was good. She was strong and prepared to care for her and Ishmael in a way that she wouldn't have been if she would have just continued on. She probably would have died in the wilderness. But
Yeah.
she was able to have her baby, have all of, the care that was afforded to her maternally by being the person who had the heir in this situation. There's also like favor that gets got curried,
Yeah.
like in that space because of her having this heir. And
Yeah.
so there's just a way that maybe, again, things were given to her, things were afforded to her, or she took that shit, which was her right.
Yeah.
That helped her later on in her journey.
Yeah, something that you're saying is bringing up this element for me that there was something in what God told Hagar in their interactions together where she chose to go back, right? And so sometimes the focus is sometimes when people talk about this is Hagar ends up losing agency. Oh, she had to go back. No, she didn't.
She could have stayed where she was. She could have kept going. She
There
had
was
options.
there's something that was a part of that interaction where she willingly went back into this place of submission. And I'm thinking about this element of our dear friend Camille Hernandez, in her book Hero and the Whore. She has a whole chapter on Hagar, and she has this line where she says, "Escaping violence involves uprooting lies and casting off blame so that we can wholeheartedly say, 'I do not deserve this.'" Right? And
Come on.
she talks about this escape and this agency that Hagar takes on in this spirit of, "I do not deserve this," is something that Hagar learned in her flight into the wilderness, right?
Yeah, I mean, and when you realize you don't deserve it, sometimes like you start to even in small ways exercise your agency in letting people who treat you sort of whatever way, you let them know that you don't deserve this or that you're not tolerating this. Or and even underneath the yoke of oppression, there are still ways that we learn to fight and push back that sometimes changes those who are oppressing us and are hurting us. And I'm not trying to give credit where credit isn't due. I'm just saying like that is a possibility. But if nothing else, like you find ways to stand stronger in who you are. And I think that like, what Camille brings forward makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you get to say you don't deserve this and you start to act like you don't deserve it. And then
Yeah,
you
and
believe it. You start to
true.
believe it for yourself.
True, which I think that is also necessary in learning how to be free, right? You know, so Genesis 16, she's very much just that woman over there, that slave over there, until, you know, she takes her place. And part of her learning, you do not deserve this, culminates in what we know of in the biblical account. Although there are other accounts that are way more lit about Hagar besides the Bible. I do want to say that. I've done a lot of research. Also, Muslims have a lot of rich history on Hagar.
I mean, they dignify our sis in a way that I think we don't always, those of us who are within the Christian faith, because we're going to talk about our own house. But yeah, no, there's a way that they honor her and give her the honor that she's due. In ways that just Christians just don't.
Yeah. I think about her second flight out of there, right? You know, so she get put out with her and Ishmael, and Abraham by this point is like, hey, what am I to do? You know, wife stripping at home. One of y'all got to go. It's you.
It's you.
It's you and baby boy Ishmael.
Clearly.
And I just think about the anguish of leaving the second time and not having enough provisions on the way, right? Because you talked about the preparation that must have happened. You know, we don't know the length of time to between Genesis 16 and 21, and the
life. We just know that it was some time.
It was some time.
No, Ishmael is no longer in her womb.
Yeah, right, right. Not a baby anymore. I think about that flight and then eventually not having enough food and provisions and that breakdown in the wilderness the second time, where she essentially prepares to die. You know, she puts her son at a distance from her and she's ready to give up the ghost. But I think about that encounter too. And so your thoughts there.
It's, I mean, I think that's, it's a hard one. And I think that it is a, I think it's a hard thing to think about, especially because of the moment that we're in right now. Like, I wonder how many of our Palestinian kin find themselves in a very similar situation, where you realize that you don't have what you need. You don't, even though you are trying to hold on to hope, you don't know if what you need is going to come. And what does it mean to prepare to no longer be on this plane, but also to be apart from the people you love the most?
Yeah.
And so I just want to call them into the room right now, because I can't see Hagar without seeing our kindred who are experiencing this, you know, in Gaza and in Haiti and in all these other places, you know, because this isn't a story that stands on its own. This isn't a story that is like one of those tales all this time, but it like stays back in a different place. Like, no, this is a story that many people are living into today. And I want to name that. But in naming that, I think that, you know, there's a lot of grief present here. Like, you know, the only parenthood I have is that related to my toy poodle. I'm a dog mom, but I can't imagine what it means for a mother who has mothered this child, you know, born of her assault, but loves him deeply. What it means for her to, like, we don't know exactly how long she journeyed. We don't know how deep into the wilderness we got. We don't know how long she was out there. But whatever it was, she came to a place where she's like, we're not going to make it. But she couldn't bear witness to his withering, or maybe didn't want him to bear witness to hers. Again, we just don't know, because the details aren't afforded us in the telling. But there is just heaviness and grief and sadness and love that are here, even though all these things are like really complicated. But in their complexity, they're hard. These are really hard things to navigate. And I don't think that there is a, like, any sunshine we can like gloss over here, because she was sure she was going to die, and so was her baby.
When I was in my master's program, I did a whole exposition on Ishmael here in the wilderness, because he also doesn't get a lot of a lot of play, right?
Nope.
And I thought of what he must have experienced through the lens of being a black man, because black young men, we know what it's like to be products of single parent homes. We know what it's like when our fathers abandon us. We know what it's like to have to, you know, later it talks about Ishmael growing up and growing in favor, right? We know what it's like to have to do that on our own with just, you know, our mothers, et cetera. So I think for black men, there's a special resonance with Ishmael and Ishmael's connection to Hagar. There's a lot for us there in the text.
I mean,
And
and even in terms of the positionality, right? Like black men, know what it's like for things to be about you, but for your story to never really be told.
literally that. And I think there's a special, beautiful promise here, both for Hagar and Ishmael, but we see that Hagar is sobbing in the wilderness, and so is Ishmael. But it's funny because in verse 17, God hears the cry of the boy is what is depicted here. And the angel of the Lord comes, and then that's when the angel, so God hears the baby boy crying, and then comes to Hagar and says, you know, what's the matter? What ails you? And again, you already know what's going on. Like, God, why are you asking me all these goofy questions?
Like, you know what the deal is. But I think this is a really important thing, and I just kind of want to take a moment to reflect on the fact that, like, God heard the child. You know, God heard Hagar, right? Like, this, like, Hagar's had that moment. But, like, what does it mean for us to reflect on the fact that, like, God hears the anguish of children? Children are also so invisibilized, you know, then and now. And so what does it mean for there to be an introduction to a God who sees not just adults, but also to see young ones? And there's a seeing of the elders, right? Like Sarai and Abram were older and they had their own interactions with God, even though they got some work to do. But like you see the younger adult, you know, having an encounter, like someone of childbearing age. And now you see a baby, you see a child, a youth. God responds like regardless of generations. And I think that that can't be dismissed, or even bypassed, or just even move like quickly by. Because in God seeing and God hearing, God responding, like there is no generational preference on the ways that God shows up or who God shows up to.
Yeah, and it makes it even more tender when we think about Ishmael would have been multiply marginalized. You ain't got no daddy. In a
Well, really, your daddy ain't shit. How about
yeah,
that?
well, yes, but in a culture that is so centering of familial ties, right? And that's where blessings come from. That's where wealth comes from. That's where your identity is shaped in your lineage, right? And so here we are with these two broken off, and God hears the boys crying, and then answers from heaven to Hagar and gives her the dignity of asking, what ails you? Right? Because God could have come on the scene and done things, but God asks a question. And I think the culmination of this whole story is God doesn't just fix it for Hagar or Ishmael. He opens her eyes, but she's the one that has to go and take, you know, with this miraculous, you know, she sees a well of water. She still has to go and provide the water to her and Ishmael. So it's a beautiful depiction of agency, because
And
although her,
co-creation.
yes,
It's the co-creation that we engage in with God. And I think that that's what's dope, is God hears her child, responds to her, and now this, you know, pathway is opened up for her to be responsive and for her to take part, not only just in the liberation. She's already been doing that liberative work. She left. She out here. But now there's an opportunity for her to engage in some healing work, Like, you know, when you're at the place where you think you're dying because you don't have provisions, like there are ways that internally you have to mend. Like, I don't know if even y'all have been, or those listening have even been marginally dehydrated. That shit is not fun. Like the exhaustion, the pain, like there is like literal healing that you have to like undergo in dealing with that. And now, like, put that in the context of being dehydrated, like undernourished, stressed, you know, sun weary, like in the middle of nowhere. Like, I mean, this is pure miracle. But even maybe just another show, not maybe, it's another show of her strength, because as she's mending and she's healing, she's now extending that same healing work to her child. And again, because the text isn't telling us, maybe even teaching him how to be that mender, healer, co-creative agent, like with this God who hears. Like she's modeling this for her baby.
And she had to. I mean, you know, the text talks about that God was with the boy as he grew up. And I wonder how much Hagar was a part of that, because she had to also have told the stories, right? You know, so she becomes invisible again. I'm like, no, this boy did grow up with God. The mama ain't have nothing to do with
Because who was
it.
taking him places? Who was talking to him? Who was developing his sense of curiosity where he connects with the divine? Who was, you know, sharing, yes, the lived experience and telling the stories, but just in communication. Like they had a very unique experience that they went through together. And it's like that whole premise of iron sharpening iron. Like, what does it mean for, like, you know, my experience of being tested, bearing witness to yours, and these are things we went through together, and talking about this, and talking about like the deliverance that we experience because of God's intervention as well as our own. Like Ishmael can grow up with God because he grew up with his mama, who is like very much a, I think, a bastion, an example of the presence of God. Like, what does it mean to walk with God and to work with God? Like he saw it, and so he could be that thing because he saw it modeled right alongside him.
And yeah, and I just think about, it's so funny how there's so much richness that we've been talking about in this text, and so many ways that can speak to us as Black people, as a Black man, Black women, et cetera. I think the icing on the cake is, even though his story started in such tragedy, again, just like Black folks, there is this arc of deliverance. There's this arc of God's compassion displayed. And I think about how, you know, 21 ends, the Hagar and Ishmael part of it is she goes and gets him a wife from Egypt, right? So she was a slave out of Egypt. She goes through all of these things. She's miraculously given provision, or shown the path to get her own provision, just like a Black woman,
Hey.
to get her own deliverance. And then she's like, let me go get you one of these good women from Egypt.
Like you ain't gonna like we not gonna be dealing with no nonsense. Like
I'm gonna get you a good woman.
But you know what? Like one of the things, you know, all of this reminds me of is what does it mean for faith to be a part of the legacy of Black folks? And I know that there are folks who are gonna disagree with me. That is your right. But I think about like my own journey around being called a Christian versus like any other way that you could title yourself to be someone who's a disciple of Jesus, right? There's a lot of ways that folks try to language this. But for me, I've chosen to use Christian because my part of my legacy, part of my inheritance is my faith. You know, I have a mother who still to this day, one of her favorite and most treasured things is a cassette tape from like 1988 with me singing. Oh gosh, what was it? It's some song, but speaking, it was something about speaking about God. Maybe it was like, I love the Lord or something. I don't know. But anyways, like I'm singing this song on cassette, and she still has the cassette, you know. My father, one of his favorite memories of me is like, as he and my mom were preparing for their divorce, me sort of like tearfully like coming like between them and just being like, basically asking like what the reason for strife was and like if they had like kind of given things over to God, like had they prayed, like why were they treating each other like this? I think about like, my grandmother, in her passing, finding these beautiful like handwritten prayers in the between the pages of her Bible and in her journals that we didn't even know she had. And so I say all that to say it's like part of my inheritance is faith. Like, I don't come from people who have a lot of money. Like, but what I do come from is the people who have a lot of faith. And specifically, the contours of their faith were Christian. And so even though the way that I inhabit and embody my Christianity is very different from that of like my family, or some members of my family, it's something that I'm not willing to like abdicate because when they didn't have anything else, they gave me faith. They taught me what it meant to believe in a God who does deliver and who shows up and who you can do things with. Now, like my studies and life experience means that I, again, believe different things about like this God and like what my journey should look like. But nonetheless, I still get this from them. I get a faith from a great grandfather who was had like literacy at a third grade level, but like would sit around the dining or the kitchen table and ask me or my father to like read the scriptures to him. And when he read, he tried to read the scriptures. Like, I'm not giving this up because my people had faith. And I think maybe even that's part of Ishmael's story or a story of some folks who are listening to this. I know we all have different backgrounds, but for some of us, we're not willing to like leave this tradition or whatever tradition we inhabit because this is the thing from our families. Like, this is a part of our legacy where so many other things have been stripped away and we've been disenfranchised. Couldn't nobody take our faith? And so it's worth holding on to, even if we have to hold it differently than our ancestors and elders.
Well, I'm gonna let you have the last word. Come on, legacy. Amen, amen. Black Coffee and Theology Pod is a production of Three Black Men, the podcast about theology, culture, and the world around us. Follow us on Twitter at Three Black Men. If you like the content that you are receiving here and want to receive more, whether that is in longer conversations, essays, devotions, and videos from either myself, Sam, or Trey, please sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/threeblackmen. Don't forget to like, rate, and review Black Coffee and Theology Pod, as well as Three Black Men.